It's a question of the tree. Is it worth saving, or do we kill that tree? And for that reason, I would be happy to move that we approve Resolution 25XXXA, denying removal of tree number 28.
As approved or as written in our agenda. Okay, so we have a motion by Strong. Discussion? Do we have a second?
I have a question.
Okay.
So what are you moving, Fred? Are you moving?
Staff recommendation.
I believe he's moving staff recommendation, which is to deny the oak tree permit at this time, and then direct them to go back and work with staff to figure out the specific plan, grading plan, and then re-present the package.
So we're denying the removal of the tree?
Yes, that's what it is.
At this time.
Right there. Recommendations. Nine. That's the recommendation.
I can't support that.
Okay. I'll second it for discussion and or moving forward. So a motion by Strong, second by Hammond, to adopt or go ahead and approve resolution as proposed, which denies at this time the removal of the tree. And we're giving direction to them to bring back further grading plans and to show how that could be approved. Darren, would that work for you?
Option A is specific. Lee requires the applicants to go through a specific plan amendment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So may I make a comment?
You bet. Discussion.
So the developer doesn't want to risk all that work to find out they're going to get denied on the tree. Who would spend all that money to do it? You're talking...
Yeah, but they could also remove a tree without moving any dirt, too.
Not according to this.
No. Yeah, I think you're reading it wrong there, Steve.
Really? Okay.
I don't have a problem personally. I'll just say this, that the tree is to the point where I would rather see a new development start over scratch with new oak trees and new parkway, and it was beautiful what you had designed. But I want to see exactly, you know, if it can be done with your grading plan, which is what staff needs to review and approve. So I have no problem with getting to this oak tree removal after we approve the grading plan. And staff recommends to us that it can work.
After you approve a specific plan amendment?
Amendment, right. Right, exactly. And we're trying to talk about, you know, time frame. That's why we're saying 6 to 8 months. I don't know how that fits into the schedule, but again, this is something that it was pre-approved as planned before, and now you're asking for a change. So to me, we need to go through the process with the public to make sure this is going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a second on the motion. Any further discussion from council? Okay, we'll call for the question. Oh, Chris, go ahead.
So the whole purpose of removing the tree is to gain access to 45,000 yards of dirt for infill. If they remove the tree and the dirt is never moved, defeats the purpose of removing the tree, and that is inconsistent with city policy. So I think it's a chicken and egg situation, but I would really like to see the process followed. I would favor tabling this to help speed this along, but if the path to getting to the specific plan amendment is to deny this, then I guess that is the compromise.
I don't see how it's going to speed things up if we, you know, vote on what the staff is asking us to do. I think it opens up the door for them to proceed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fred, go ahead.
One other aspect of this that I think isn't being discussed is that every arborist has recommended that it be denied. Every single arborist concerned with the tree. So this is a matter of the tree. It's not a matter of the project.
I think the applicants are.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right, we'll go ahead and call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. We want to make sure that you guys get a good project for us, so thank you. You want to do a five-minute break? Okay, we'll do that.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
As President, he led the United States through two of the greatest crises in recent history, the Great Depression and World War II. As a man, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's confidence and vitality made him one of the most beloved figures of the 20th century. Though physically crippled by polio, Roosevelt rallied America through some of its darkest hours, assuring citizens struggling through the Great Depression that they had nothing to fear but fear itself. The nation responded by making him the only man elected president four times, the fourth in 1944, despite his increasingly evident deteriorating health. But with the nation still at war with Germany and Japan, the American people stuck with their courageous commander-in-chief. By April 1945, Franklin Roosevelt had been president for more than 12 years, guiding the nation from the brink of economic ruin to the verge of victory in World War II. But on April 12th, while vacationing in Warm Springs, Georgia, he suffered a massive cerebral hemorrhage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the Mutual Studios in New York City. This nation has suffered this day a staggering loss. At this moment at Warm Springs, Georgia, President Franklin D. Roosevelt lies with the problems of the nation finally lifted from his shoulders, stricken late this afternoon with cerebral hemorrhage. He passed away before his physicians could be of any assistance, if assistance in such a case is possible at all. Vice President Harry Truman, who from here on will be President Truman, went immediately to the White House. A special cabinet meeting was called, and we should know more about what is going to happen in Washington as the evening wears on. But Franklin D. Roosevelt, the first president to be elected for four terms in the White House, has passed away, and that is the overshadowing of all news events that have happened or can happen for quite a while.
The news of Franklin Roosevelt's death plunged the country into shock and mourning. Thousands stood silent along the railroad tracks as the train bearing his coffin made its slow trip from Georgia northward to his final resting place in Hyde Park, New York, bidding goodbye to a president whose indomitable spirit had inspired a nation through poverty and war, and whose legacy would benefit and inspire future generations of Americans for decades to come.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air, true stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell.
The mission was daring and complicated. The flights of B-24s would take off from airfields in Libya, fly more than 1,200 miles, and approach their target area at treetop levels. The mission was also considered vital to the Allied war effort. Its purpose? Destroy German oil refineries that were the lifeblood of the Nazi war machine. Five U.S. airmen would receive the nation's highest award for valor when it was over. Ploiești, Romania, August 1st, 1943. One of those five was Colonel John R. Kane of the Army Air Corps, who led the third element of heavy bombers in the mass low-level attack. En route to the target, Colonel Kane's element became separated from the leading portion of the formation while avoiding dense and dangerous cumulus cloud conditions over mountainous terrain. But rather than turn back from such a vital mission, Colonel Kane elected to press on to the target. When he reached it, he discovered that another group had apparently missed its target and instead attacked and damaged the target assigned to his element. Despite the now thoroughly worn defensives, intensive anti-aircraft fire, enemy fighter planes, oil fires and explosions and dense smoke over the target, and the real danger of explosions from delayed action bombs previously dropped, Colonel Kane led his formation into the attack. By his brilliant courage, gallant leadership, and superior flying skill, he and the formation under his command successfully attacked the vast refinery that was so vital to the enemy war effort. Through his conspicuous gallantry in this most hazardous mission, and by his intrepidity at the risk of life above and beyond the call of duty, Colonel Kane made a vital personal contribution to the mission's success. Army Air Corps Colonel John S. Kane was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor in recognition of his gallantry, courage, and heroic acts.
The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
We'll go ahead and reconvene our city council meeting, and we're at item number two on discussion, the amendment number two to operating memorandum number one of the South Olson Chandler Development Agreement, modifying timing of certain improvements. Warren Price, you have that item for us.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council, Warren Frace, Community Development Director. This next item is also the Venado Project, also known as Olson South Chandler Specific Plan. This is amendment number two to operating memo number one. This is part of the development agreement process for the project. So just a recap on the project, it was approved as a specific plan with 1,293 units. As part of that, the council approved a development agreement. That's basically a contract between the city and the developer about how the project will develop beyond conditions of approval. As part of the development agreement process, we do have the ability to approve operating memos. Those are minor clarifications and adjustments to the development agreement that are mutually agreed on by both parties, being the city council and the developer. So the council did approve operating memo number one. That was in February of 2023. That changed the timing on some of the off-site traffic improvements and some of the on-site recreation and amenity timings. We came back in August of 2024 with amendment number one to adjust some of those timing frames based on some delays in construction. We now are getting closer to finishing up the traffic improvements off-site, and we do need some additional time beyond what was anticipated with Amendment 1. When we did Amendment 1, there was two thresholds for the timing. One was the 350th housing unit. We're not to that yet. We're at a basically 190, so we're halfway there. But there was also a 12-month trigger that basically is this month. So it's not the housing trigger that we've exceeded. It was the timeline trigger, which, you know, in retrospect, we probably should have given it a little bit more time. So the actual impact for traffic is generated by the unit construction, not the time. So this is still consistent with the assumptions of the EIR. So operating memo one, like I said, covered traffic improvements and park improvements. So I'll just run through kind of what they are and where they're at. So the first is the 13th Street signal. So that's over here, 13th and Creston Road. So here's the Olson project out here on the edge of town. The 13th Street signals are basically at the river and the freeway. There's three different signals. Those are currently under construction today. The second improvement was Niblick South River turn lanes. So this is down next to the Walmart Center and the Albertson Center on Niblick Road. That requires a large retaining wall. That we can't start that until after the rainy season, so we need more time for that. And then the third improvement would be the signal on Scott Street and Creston Road, which is right here. That will start once the sewer line that serves the project is completed in that location. So that's coming along very quickly. There was also requirements to improve Royal Oak Park, build the Turtle Creek Linear Park, and then build a pool and a farm stand amenity within the project. Those are all the green stars. All those projects are completed. The Turtle Creek Park still needs to be accepted by the City Council, but all the improvements are done in the field.
Quick question before you get to next slide. I thought we had a project also at Creston Road and Niblick.
Right. We do. That has a different timing. That's 500th unit.
Okay.
So it's not covered by the operating memo because it's still within the parameters of the original EIR assumptions.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So here's what the request is tonight. Is additional time for the signals. Those signal, and these timelines are based on the actual contractor estimates or his These numbers or these timelines have been provided by the contractor that's doing the work for these three projects. So we have a high level of confidence versus in the past we were kind of estimating. So the 13th Street signal projects, like I said, are under construction right now. Those will be done on December 1st of 2025. The Scott Street signal would be done March 1st of 2026. And then the Niblick Road, South River Road improvements would be done August 1st of 2026. Like I said, these timelines have been provided by the contractor. Contractor has a high level of confidence in these timelines. So the reason we need this, it's a variety of things that have converged. We have supply chain issues with ordering different parts and equipment for this. There were some design changes that had to be approved and changed at the last minute that extended some of the timelines as well. These all have to be bid out because these are CFD funded and reimbursed projects, so they have to go through a bidding process. They've had trouble getting responsive contractors, so that didn't help. And then these are very complex projects with retaining walls, signal lights, moving mast arms, new poles, signal timing, just a lot of items. So, you know, it's been a lot of effort on both the developer and city staff to get this together, and that's why we need basically, you know, another 10 months or so to finish all these projects. So the recommendation is to authorize the city manager to execute Amendment 2 to the Olson South Chandler Specific Plan Development Agreement Operating Memo Number 1. So all the attachments are included in the resolution that we need to take final action on this. That'll conclude staff's report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Warren. Questions over Warren? Grace?
No.
On my side? I don't know if we need to have an applicant. Yes, if you like.
We tried to pull this item from tonight. We want to pull it, this item from discussion tonight.
Okay, you're asking us not to take action on this?
Correct, yes.
What's the reason?
The developer asked to pull this tonight. We have to relook at things now that our other project also got denied, so we need to relook at and evaluate our project. So we need to pull this for tonight and reevaluate.
Okay, staff, is there a problem with that? I mean, because we've agendized it.
Can we stay on the original timeline?
Yeah, Warren, can you tell us whether or not they're currently in compliance with Operating Memo 1 is currently amended?
So they're out of compliance. October 1st was the deadline to have these offsites done. If we approve it tonight, we'll be back into compliance. If we don't take action tonight, then we clearly will be out of compliance come November.
So just so that I'm clear, what the developer is asking is for us to not act on this and leave you in default under the terms of your existing agreement with the city.
That's a big one. Yes.
The council could act on this, and then you could make a supplemental request in the future based upon previous actions. But if we fail to act on this, you're be out of compliance with your agreements with the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to leave it then on because I'll deal with it with the developer. Okay. We'll just leave it on.
I guess, is there a question? Do you need to change some of your dates certain that we were going to agree to? In other words, can you not make some of these now after the agreement has been talked over with staff?
Right. We wanted to reevaluate some dates now that other things are going to get pushed back and our project's going to be on hold. So we need to reevaluate the dates. We didn't necessarily want to cancel it completely and not get an extension, but more of an evaluation of the dates to make sure that everything is still in alignment and the project can still move forward.
Okay, so we could actually, we've opened the item and we could continue it. If somebody wants to make a motion possibly to give you more time to work out maybe a date certain, the next meeting to have you work with staff?
Yeah, an extension to the next meeting would be nice so we can discuss it with the...
Warren, would that be okay? Or what do you think?
I'm going to echo the city attorney. I mean, at that point, I believe we'd be out of compliance. And so that becomes a concern for, I would hope, the applicant and the city, or the developer and the city. These are, if I'm not mistaken, CEQA mitigation requirements, Warren?
Correct.
So, you know, while they're not at the trigger just yet, we would want to maintain the compliance measures in such a way that both the city and the developer are pushing forward to have a clear understanding of when those mitigation measures are going to occur. If there's another request to delay, then, you know, we've shown a history here where we worked with a developer to do that. And this is news for us as of, you know, this moment.
Right.
My recommendation to the council would be to approve as is. And then we can continue to work with the developer as we have been.
Right.
So, Chris, just to clarify, because in our last meeting, you did say that there was going to be no more changes to this amendment going forward. So now we can make changes to this if...
The intent, and again, my recommendation stands at this point. My recommendation stands to move this forward, and then if we need to, we can continue to work with
make
it.
Amendment 3 if we had to at that point.
Yes, thank you.
That's kind of what I was thinking. So we're going to have to keep you in compliance. Okay, so the applicant has spoken. Let me open it up to the public real quick. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Adrian Peters. I'm the Vice President of Land Acquisitions for Kaovnanian Homes. And we're building our Mirabella project in planning areas 4 and 5 of Veneto. As a party to the development agreement, we highly concur with the city manager's recommendation that you guys move forward with the staff recommendation to approve this. So that we do remain in compliance with the development agreement and all the other project obligations. And if there's additional conversations that need to occur with the master developer about timelines, priorities, and deadlines, I understand what you're saying, Mr. Mayor, that it may be a third operating memo might be in order. But for tonight, I cannot go back home and tell my supervisors that we're running the risk of being out of compliance because I would be unemployed tomorrow and have to come to you asking for a job. So I concur with the city manager's recommendation. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back to council for discussion and or action.
Mayor Hammond, I move we approve resolution 25XXX.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Fred Strong, discussion.
Well, I hit that comment because, of course, that's my area. And I'm assuming that with all the other construction going on, the project over by Meadowlark is going to be very lightly impacted. But one thing that isn't in here that I wish was in is that if that stoplight goes into Scott Street, we can remove the stop sign, which is a block away, which doesn't make any sense anymore.
Well, we'll let staff talk about but the stop sign you're talking about at the further north on the intersection there where they go into the park?
No, it's on Creston Road, the stop sign on Creston Road, one block before this on the other side of the park.
Oh.
And I won't probably do it justice.
Which actually was put in originally to make it easier for a councilman that preceded us by 20 years to get in and out of his house.
And I'm sorry for jumping over you, Councilmember Strong. I was going to suggest, and I won't do it justice, that we can independently look at the stop sign issue separate from the traffic signal issue, but your request is noted and we can look at that.
Get Leslie to look at that, for sure. So. Okay, so we have a motion by Gregory, second by Bausch, to approve the motion as proposed. Any discussion, further discussion? All right, we'll call for the question then, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. All right, so moved. And let's get you guys back together so we can work this out. Get it done. All right, that takes care of our agenda pretty much. We have now, moving on to City Manager Report, Mr. Huat.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few items for you this evening. The first, earlier this morning, the County Board of Supervisors met, and on a vote of 3-2, they chose to move the ambulance service RFP process forward. This would take the RFP document and move it to the state, where the state would then review it and then ultimately come back to the county, and then the county would issue that RFP. As you recall, several meetings ago, this council voted unanimously to authorize staff to participate in the future RFP process when and if that occurs, and now we have more clarity that we do believe that it would occur. The timeline is still be determined, but I would anticipate that we would not see an RFP from the county until sometime well into 2026 at the soonest. Beyond that, we did want to note that we issued a news release earlier this week announcing that we have begun road repairs in the Crestline Fairview neighborhood, funded by Measure I-24. This is going to, of course, completely redo the pavement on certain street segments. The pavement operations component of that project probably won't start until the end of November, and then we anticipate project completion in January of next year. There's a lot of work that has to be done before the pavement can happen, but know that that's moving forward. And then, as you know, we've been working on parking lots in the downtown area to improve those, and the railroad lot is well under construction. And we're going to be moving into construction on the Marv's lot here soon, I believe within the next week or so. And that's going to include new pavement, new improved drainage, new lighting for aesthetics and safety. And we'll be working with and have been working with the business owners and the Main Street Association to provide ample notification. Did want to make a note, and we'll continue to communicate with those stakeholders that alternative free public parking is available on Spring Street between 12th and 13th, as well as the train station. There's ample parking in both those locations while we make these improvements. And then, speaking of the train station, if you've been down there lately, we continue to make improvements to this gateway in accordance with your economic development strategic plan. He's not here this evening, but most recently, Paul Sloan, along with facilities staff, helped coordinate the installation of several new signs down there to help people find their way both to the trains and when they get off the train to our local businesses and downtown area. The next thing that's coming down there in the not-too-distant future, we hope, is a new restroom. As you recall, we closed that restroom probably a year or so now ago due to some issues we were having down there, and there's some new concepts and ideas we'll be bringing forward to hopefully have a new restroom there in the foreseeable future. So a lot of happening out in the community. Wanted to just give you an update on those few things. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Next, we have council business and committee reports. Let me start on my right with Mr. Bausch, and then we can come back this way and finish with.
Thank you. Very quickly, October 9th, reviewed a potential concept plans for library renewal. It looks very exciting. I can't talk about it because it hasn't been approved yet, but I'm really excited to see that move forward. October 17th, provided input for an upcoming council visioning session and a great conversation with Jacob Green and Associates. That was very enjoyable. October 20th, Senior Citizen Advisory heard an excellent presentation regarding SLO County's master plan on the aging strategic plan from Robert Diaz, program manager, and then also yesterday, Parks and Recreation meeting. That's my report.
Thank you, Chris. Mr. Strong.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'd like to ask the council if they'd be willing to bring back Hope's Village of SLO for consideration, despite the actions of the audience regarding their proposal.
I think the proposal itself is worth the consideration, if that's agreeable to this council. And we could also bring back removing that stop sign.
Yeah, work with Leslie. She's good at looking at those kind of things, so.
And then for the meetings I've attended, I apologize to everybody, including the audience, that I'm almost deaf tonight because of the last 3 weeks I've been over the grapevine 6 times. And my ears are still somewhere up there at 4,000 feet, fortunately. But I'm hoping to get that corrected next week. However, we had multiple meetings of SLOCOG that I should talk about. One was their priorities for our projects have changed. And their priority is, number one, that the most important one is the bridge over at Vine Street. But they intend to give us the money to build the bridge from a grant they're going after. And they're hoping that, or money they've got set aside, actually, and they're hoping that we will take the money that we have set aside for that bridge and move it over to the crossing over Highway 46 on Union Road, because that one has dropped down on their list to number 4 of the projects. So they prefer to see the right turn lane off of Highway 101 onto Highway 46 be a higher priority than Union Road. That's their opinion, because we haven't gotten enough approvals yet, in their opinion. So they think that we're delayed on that one. And I have to say that we can't give them a start time for when everything's going to happen up at the airport, because we're still waiting on the federal government. So in all honesty, I represent the entire region where I'm sitting there, even though I'm appointed by his group. So I had to agree with them that it made sense for how their money is available. The other thing is that it was reported that the governor has signed the sales tax legislation so that if their sales tax measures passes, it will not affect the cities at all. So it exempts the cities from any impact from that particular sales tax measure being taken to the public. All right? Because they're going to be going after them too, probably. It's out to study. LoSan, which is the Pacific Surfliner Railroad, I had a meeting there. And unfortunately, the state denied. Well, first of all, we are going to have equipment in January of 2026 for an additional trip from San Diego all the way up to San Luis Obispo and back on the Pacific Surfliner. However, Caltrans Division of Railroad denied the operating money. Said, no, we're not going to approve your operating that train. So we are now looking for a legislative solution. So we have to talk to our state senator and assemblywoman to see if they will support legislation that would restore that money to us. So that's very important. And finally, I represented the city at the League of California Cities conference, annual conference, and there were no resolutions, so I never had to vote on anything. However, I did attend many sessions on the legal decisions that are affected the city this last year. It was very informative, and hopefully will help keep us from making mistakes that we could make, even if our city attorney doesn't speak up and tell us, no, you can't do that. All right?
That's her job.
So that's about it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilman Gregory.
Well, first I'd like to thank staff for our temporary quarters over here. But I would like a scoreboard over here to see what's going on next door. So if you could arrange that, I'd appreciate it. So
maybe another screen.
Yeah,
right there.
Anyway, I like being in a place I know, though. The gymnasium's great. So I attended the senior barbecue where they gave away so many prizes and gifts from the community. It was great. So the entire audience there, I don't know how many gifts they received, but Fred didn't get one, but everybody else did. I attended the senior advisory committee today with Councilman Bausch, and then the county presented the senior
aging plan
for the county. yeah. What is it?
Master plan.
Master plan for aging. And it's a pretty bleak thing because there's a lot of need and there's no money. That's my opinion on that. But we'll continue to work with them. I was able to attend the Pioneer Day on a tractor, and I got heckled by a fellow city councilwoman by a microphone. But it didn't bother me. I just smiled. Then I waved at Frida on the way through. But I just want to say thank you to our community for Pioneer Day. It is the committee, the tractor committee, all the volunteers, and everything the city does. Frida with all of her equipment and our police department and fire, everybody. It's just a great, great event and something we should all be proud of. And I don't know how Mayor Hammond did it, but he actually got out of the parade and waved at me when I drove by. And I said, "You're in the parade. How can you be doing this?" So, but he does have rank on location. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Ms. Beal.
Yes, Pioneer Day was a lot of fun. I helped announce with Mr. Joel Peterson, and if I do say so myself, we were pretty funny. It was really a great time, and thank you everyone for helping to make it happen. So I also attended Cal Cities down in Long Beach, and of course I attended a lot of great sessions. One of the things I was struck with were my one-on-one conversations with people from different parts of the state in different capacities. I just want to remind people we need to be really proud of what we have going on here. We do not have, I heard some of the challenges that these other jurisdictions have, and we don't have that. I really came home feeling very, very grateful for the staff, for the leadership, for the programs, everything going on in this jurisdiction. So we need to remember that. One of the sessions I attended, it was child care as essential infrastructure, and I thought it was a very interesting way to frame it. We don't always think of cities and our place with child care, and I know we're all a generation away from having kids at home where we needed child care, but it's a huge issue for our working families. The child care costs as much as really the housing costs for these families. And if you think about it, it's very different than when we were raising our kids. And if you think about it, you know, that costs local businesses because there's problems in turnover and absenteeism with the, so it costs our businesses. It ends up influencing taking people out of the workplace. So that, you know, costs our productivity. Just a lot of it also affects kind of our desirability as a community, as a place to be raising kids, if we aren't being thoughtful about how we're addressing working families and their kids. And one of the things they talked about was they said, you know, child care belongs in city planning because, you know, we have this identified in our economic development strategic plan. And people ask me, they're like, "Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Child care is important." I'm like, "I don't know. I'm not sure where the city fits into this. I don't know how to answer that question." But they answered it. They really talked about community development, planning, zoning, parking, accommodations. Like, these are the ways that we can be being proactive and thoughtful about keeping child care front of mind as we're moving forward with different projects. So I just wanted to share that with you. Well, last thing is they said, you know, some people need bridges and roads to go to work. Some people need child care. So I will leave it with that. Join me for Pizza with Chris on Monday at 4:30 at Pizza Express up in Uptown, 33 something or another Spring Street. It'll be great. I look forward to talking to my Uptown neighbors. So thank you for letting me be of service.
All right. Thank you, Chris. For me, I started off this last session was at the League of Cities, represented Paso and Long Beach, of course. Eight sessions I think I attended, and everything from the general session to development agreements. I think Chris Huat and I were both on that one. Very interesting. Good education on what goes into these very things that we talked about last night, or tonight, about the development agreement, the agreement between the city and the developer and what, who's doing what. Very important, get it right. Also attended this morning the Board of Supervisors meeting where the consent item 14 was a very long, lengthy item. We were all there, Chris and I and Jonathan Stornetta, along with, I think, every other fire chief in the county, many firefighters, city managers. Everybody spoke in approval of moving this forward to get this RFP out so we can actually further discuss maybe a different model for ambulance service in our county after so many, 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 many years. So that we'll see what that's going to happen in the next few months. Tomorrow we have PRAGA, Paso Robles Area Water Authority, meeting here in this room at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I think that's all I had on my last 2 weeks. That's at 10 o'clock again tomorrow morning here. Upcoming events, we have the Paso Robles Day of Muertos Festival this Saturday, October 25th at 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the city park. Development Review Committee is going to be meeting October 27th in this room. Again, most all of our city meetings are going to be pretty much in this room, aren't they, Melissa? I mean, both Planning Commission?
All of Planning Commission, City
yeah.
Council, and I believe Youth Commission and Library Board of Trustees are meeting in this room now as well.
Very good. Okay.
And DRC.
All right. Then we have the Paso Robles Planning Commission, again, October 28th. Warren, that's your group, going to be here in this room at 6:30. The Halloween Downtown Trick-or-Treat, October 31st, going to be Friday from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the downtown area. All the merchants are going to be out there with helping the kids celebrate Halloween. Development Review Committee is going to be November 3rd, 3:30 in this room, Norris Room. And the next council meeting for us is going to be the Paso Robles City meeting at 6 o'clock, November 4th. That's 2 weeks out, I believe.
Mayor, I'm sorry to chime in and backtrack a little bit. Staff wanted to get some clarification on the request for the Hope's Village item. Is that affirmative that the council wants that to return? And if so, would that be under presentations, given I think the request was for the group just to be able to provide a presentation? Is that, I just want to make sure that we're getting clear direction. Is that the direction of the council?
Is that the consent, pretty much? Did you hear him okay? I had a little trouble with this room. Of course.
You're talking about the public hearing?
I'm sorry, the Hope's Village presentation.
Right.
Councilmember Strong asked that return. I just wanted to make sure that we got confirmation that a majority of you wanted that back. I wanted to get direction, and if you did want it back, we would. You know.
What I asked them to do is get with staff. If there's an agenda item you want to bring forward okay. for any of our discussion yeah. items.
And just real quickly, I didn't mention it earlier, I do have a scheduled meeting with them. They did reach out to staff, and I am meeting with them. I don't know if it's on the books just yet, but it's in the works. So I.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on that too, Chris.
Someone also mentioned the stop sign. Like that, not that.
Work on the stop sign.
So on the tiny houses. I think it really needs to start with a meeting with staff and see what they have to really offer. I have a very severe concern on funding.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Yeah, location, obviously is going to be a big one, and funding, obviously. But that's why I want them to get with you folks to
okay.
see if they can be developing an item for us to discuss.
Okay, thank you for that.
Okay.
That direction.
Okay, so that brings us then to the very end. We have adjournment. Looking for a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Motion to adjourn. All in.
Tonight's Paso Robles City Council meeting on KPRL was brought to you by NCI Affiliates. Visit their convenient post office on Lanay Road, just past Food for Less in Paso Robles. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL. 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. We now join our regularly scheduled program in progress.
At 36,000 feet, remember that number because I think it's significant, forced the jet to make an emergency landing. There was a picture of the pilot's arms just covered with blood because it literally shattered the windshield at the front of the airplane. And this is on a big commercial jet. United Flight 1093 from Denver to Los Angeles. Chuck, welcome back to the program. What in the world do you think happened in this case?
Well, thanks for having me on, Lars. I'm not really sure what object would have hit the aircraft. If I had to speculate, but it's only speculation, I would say that it was probably a piece of ice from another aircraft operating in the vicinity, maybe from a leaky potable water line or something along those lines that can immediately freeze if it falls off or drifts off the aircraft. But that's, again, speculating. I don't know. The important thing is that something hit the upper left windshield of this pilot's aircraft, the Boeing 737 MAX, and it severely cracked and shattered at least part of the windshield. And so the significance of that is whether or not you're going to lose pressurization if the cracked windshield couldn't hold pressure at altitude at 36,000 feet where they were. The difference in pressure from the inside to the outside of the cabin is somewhere around 8 to 8.4 pounds per square inch, and that's a lot of loading on the airframe and on any other objects that enclose the outside of the inn. So if you weaken the windshield, there's a chance that that it could be shattered additionally or more damage to cause a pressurization loss. So the first thing they're going to do is declare an emergency with air traffic control, which they did, and then they're going to descend as fast as they can get down to lower altitudes to reduce that pressure difference.
By the way, Chuck, you've flown in planes like this, what, hundreds or thousands of times as the pilot in charge in the left seat up front. How strong are those windows? Is there a way of characterizing? Because I know they go through testing.
Yeah, they're very strong. And interestingly enough, one of the things that keeps the windshield pliable, and it's required to go with the operation of the aircraft. In other words, you can't use an MEL or what they call a minimum equipment list to defer windshield heat to later maintenance on some schedule. It has to go with the operation of the aircraft on every flight. So if the windshield heat is not operating, that immediately grounds the aircraft. And, of course, it becomes a big deal if it fails in flight, too. It's not an emergency without anything cracking, but you can't operate the aircraft without it. And the reason is the windshield heat provides more pliability with that glass frame, so that it, if in the event something like this happens, it reduces the chance of a complete failure. So it obviously was working, and it may have been part of the reason why the pilot might have suffered some burns, because the windshield gets pretty hot when the windshield heat is on, and it also serves to help de-ice the windshield if there's snow or freezing rain or something like that when you're operating in that sort of an environment. So that's what they use with the multiple layers in the windshield to keep it pliable and less likely to shatter if there was an impact with something.
In fact, I've read about the chicken guns they use, where they'll take chickens, not frozen chickens, but chickens, and fire them at the windshields at 350 miles an hour to make sure that you could a plane could survive a bird strike.
Yeah, there's all kinds of testing that Boeing and the aircraft manufacturers do